You're listening to the Broadcast Basement On Demand Radio Network.
It's the podcast in the Broadcast Basement.
Welcome down to my 9-foot homemade oak bar. Pour yourself a cold one. You are listening to Bucks in the Basement. My name's Chris, and Craig here is the biggest Pirates fan you'll ever meet. Let's talk Pirates baseball now. Welcome to Bucks in the Basement.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but then the next day it's different. They change, but they don't know what they want. All they do is change, yeah, yeah, yeah. Going left, going right, travel day, travel night. That's where we'll go. No excuses, no goodbyes, no one cries, no one lies. We'll never know. Hip, hip.
I couldn't make it this past weekend out to 412 Brewing, but Craig Toth, representing Bucks in the Basement, hanging with Gary Morgan, 847 Western Avenue in Pittsburgh, PA, at the 412 Brewery Tap Room. I'm going to throw it out to him right now, with a bunch of Bucks in the Basement fans in the background, for a live edition of Bucks in the Basement, the podcast for fans, by fans, and always at bucksinthebasement.com. Take it away, Craig.
It's Craig Toth from Bucks in the Basement, sitting here with Gary Morgan from Inside the Pirates and SI Channel. Gary, you just put out an article today. We're sitting here watching the Pirates actually maybe get their second win in a row. You put out an article today talking about the fundamentals of the baseball team and how that's going to be one of the key components to the success of this team because, I mean, we do have some power, some pop in the bat. There's, you know, O'Neill Cruz hit a home run today. Gregory Polanco hit a home run today. But there's, like, some mistakes that are going to cost us runs, that are going to cost us in certain ways that we're going to need those extra runs. So talk a little bit about that for me.
Yeah, so despite what's going on today and the beautiful, high-blowing winds of Bradenton, Florida, you know, they're not going to hit three home runs in an inning very often this year. And more often than not, they're going to have to rely on small ball. The first step of winning with small ball is the fundamentals. Run to the right base at the right time. Take off when you have an opportunity. Don't try to take that extra base if it isn't there. Take the extra base if it is there. Throw into the right base. So many little things that I'd like to see them focus on before they head in the direction of talking about wanting to add a fourth outfielder or cute little tricks like that that I think are going to affect them 1/100th of the time. I want them to focus on the big picture, the stuff that comes up all the time.
Yeah, because that's a lot of stuff with when you have young players. And even as a person like that has played baseball their entire life, there's some stuff that's just innate. There's some stuff of recognizing what's going to happen when somebody hits it to left field and there's a runner that could possibly be rounding the base to, you know, to home plate, and there's going to be a play at the plate. There's some things that a guy knows, you know, where to throw it. If there's a guy that you recognize, there's a guy also cutting for second, and can you get the guy at second? And because the guy at home plate's going to score no matter what. And the other stuff is that there is that innate nature, and you have a third base coach who's supposed to be helping you as to where the ball's hit. Do you have the speed? Do you have the ability to score if you're coming to that part? You know, if you're putting your foot on the bag and the guy's getting the ball, does this guy have the speed to be able to get the, you know, the wind up home as opposed to the stop sign? And that's stuff that's going to be costing the Pirates possibly a few runs throughout this year, and that could be the difference between 78, 79 wins and 70 wins at that point in time, especially if the pitching staff comes out like they're supposed to. I know that my boy Trevor Williams has, I said in the last podcast, has struggled a lot. I still believe that he's going to pull it together. But if there's going to be a lot of these close games, and especially with a bullpen that could lock it down, these little mistakes could end up being something that people will be going on Twitter and Facebook and all the time just talking about how we should have won that game. And that's pretty much, I think, what your article punctuated. That's where I think you were going with that, is that if there are opportunities that can be had, that we need to capitalize on those opportunities and not let them pass us by. Because, I mean, we're not the Minnesota Twins. We don't have a bunch of guys that are going to hit, like, everybody in their lineup. Even Mitch Garver, for God's sake, gets in the lineup and he hits 31 home runs. I know, possible juice ball or whatever.
That's the saving grace, though, because, you know, the Minnesota Twins weren't the Minnesota Twins either until they got coached up. So, you know, maybe there is something to be said for the way they'll focus on launch angle, that they're going to turn some of these 10 home run guys into 15 home run guys. Maybe. But I think more often than not, we're going to score runs by, you get a leadoff double, you get that guy home without ever having another base hit. That's the kind of runs the Pirates need to focus on getting. We're not going to get the Earl Weaver three-run homer. It just isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
Not that often anyway. I expect Gregory Polanco to do better than most do. But that's 25 home runs. If Josh Bell does great, that's 30, 35. Who else is going to be contributing that kind of power to this lineup? There's not a lot when you look up and down it.
Yeah, it's a lot of doubles hitters. I mean, if you even look at Adam Frazier, you look at Brian Reynolds. I mean, I know Reynolds, as everybody called him. It's, you know, he's a guy that hits for average. He's a guy that will produce, but not maybe to the level that we expected him to. Somebody like Kevin Newman, who, I mean, we've been talking about all day here. Me and Gary and Cody from Rumbunner have been hanging out here at 412 Brewery talking about, you know, the regression that Newman could have. And he may have it, he may not. The numbers are pointing in the direction that he will. But you can't look for that, you know, 10 to 15 home run guy from him. You can hope for that. You can hope for that from Reynolds. You can hope from that from Frazier. But none of these guys are like the big home run guys. A lot of people put people at first and third base and want to see, you know, 30 home runs from each corner. And that's not the type of team that the Pirates have right now. And especially if you're going to call up Key Brian Hayes, I don't believe that's the type of team that you're looking to have moving forward either. You may get somebody as a surprise. You may get, you know, we saw Ono Cruz, like we said before, hit a home run today. You might get a surprise from a shortstop, if he's still at shortstop, or in right field, Gregory Polanco with that power. But you can't look for somebody to have, you know, us to have three to four guys with 30 home runs. The runs are going to have to come in a different way than for other teams. And of course, everybody will say small market, small ball, or whatever it would be. It's baseball. You score the runs how you can score the runs. Some teams choose to score the runs with the long ball. Some teams, you know, the Cardinals have done it for years. Cody brought that up when we were talking here earlier. You know, the Cardinals for years have thrived off of the small ball. It's not like they were ever hitting that many home runs. The times when they were beating us in the division series, you know, back in 2013, that year, I'm pretty sure, I mean, I can't quote it as to how many they exactly had, but they were not towards the top of MLB in home runs that year. A lot of those runs were coming from this small ball. They were coming from speed. They were coming from being able to move players over. It was coming from, you know, a lot of stuff that people, a lot of times it's not sexy. I always say
I use the example of the early 90s teams with Leland coaching them. You know, that team had a lot of holes. I mean, people want to pretend that was a great team, and, you know, and they did win some division titles. The Atlanta Braves got in their way a few times. The Reds got in their way once. But, you know, it was a good team. They had a good core, a lot of good players. They had a lot of holes. They never had a true leadoff hitter. They never had a good first baseman. They never had a second baseman that could hit. You know, third base was always an empty hole, unless Bonilla played there. So, I mean, you know, the lineup itself had some problems. Jim Leland had a formula for how to get runs. It worked most of the time. It didn't once they came to the playoffs. But, you know, small ball works, and it keeps you from getting blown out, which was really, last year, a lot of what took this from being a bad season that had a lot of injuries and turned it into an embarrassment.
Yeah, because and there was times where the team would even struggle and fight back. They would be down, 11-3 to start off the game, and they would fight their way back, and it would be like 11-9, and then the next thing you know, it would be 17-9 before stuff could happen. You know, they were a very resilient team, but it's only going to get you so far. Everything for the Pirates, I mean, we've both had our projections. I think we both landed right around 73 wins this year. And we've been talking. There's a lot that can be done to bump that up. It's not going to bump it up to 93 wins. You could bump that up a little bit. But if things start to fall apart again and you're not focusing on these fundamentals and these things that can prevent runs or can just get you a couple extra runs, I mean, it could easily fall below what we've had last year. I don't see this as a 100-loss team, but I recognize that this also isn't a 90-95 win team either, but it's definitely not as bad as everybody thought it is, and especially after a weekend like this. Of course, people are going to get on Facebook and say we were, had no wins before this, and then we shut somebody out, and then we put up 13 runs, and the Pirates are, back on track and stuff like this. That's also not the case. Like, don't fall for that type of stuff either. You have to put your realization, and you have to put it in focus of what this team is and what these guys are and the types of moves they're going to make to hopefully make this team better. The team that's as it's constructed right now, I don't see it as a team that's constructed at the end of the season, especially going into next year. There could be some guys that are still around at the end of this year, but there may be a lot of guys that are definitely gone. I mean, we've talked about Keone Kelly, we've talked about Frazier, we've talked about Archer, we've talked about all these guys that could be gone. And then, but you also have to look are those the types of players also that are going to bring you to that 98 win team that you had in 2015? Possibly, but are they going to be the guys? Could they be guys that are a part of thing that could bring you above 500 again? I absolutely believe that. I mean, this team as it's constructed is better in my eyes than the 2018 team. The 2018 team that was over 500 also had its holes. They had people that were pitching out of their minds. They had guys that were hitting out of their minds at times, but they also had people that were consistent. And if this team gets consistent, I believe that it could be better than that team. But I'm not saying that's what's going to happen either. It could be destructive, and Nick Birdie just gave up a home run, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Oh, my God, that just frustrates the bejesus out of me. Because that's a guy that I definitely want to be looking towards, and I know it's spring training, but the look on his face, you can tell he's, I don't know if he threw the wrong pitch or put it where he wanted to put it. Oh, he hung that up a little too long. It hung a little bit too long, and he didn't want to.
Damn it. The peaks and
darn it.
The peaks and valleys of spring training are something that you don't try to get too caught up in. So, I wrote an article about being frustrated about the fundamentals. But it's more about just the appearance of not focusing on them. When I see Colin Moran lead off an inning with a double and end the inning standing at second, nobody's moved him over. Nobody's gotten him anywhere near coming home. That's giving away runs. Spring training, okay, you want to let your guys take your hacks and whatnot, but I think it's time to focus on what makes most games winnable for a team like this. And that is not getting people on and letting everyone swing for the fences. It may have worked today, great, 13 runs, but that's today. If you really want to win in the regular season with a team like this, you have got to move people over, bunt people over, sack fly, do everything like that.
Yeah, and if you guys want to go back and read an article that I wrote, I don't even know how many weeks ago it is, because once you get old, the time flies by and you don't know time anymore. It could have been 2 weeks ago, it could have been 2 years ago, but I know it was sooner rather than later. I wrote an article about the strength of the Pirates. Well, how everybody was talking about that last year, hitting was the strength of the Pirates, and they just looked at the basic average. And as the basic average laid out, we were in the top five of all of Major League Baseball on average. So they're like, why isn't the team better, you know, than it is? And the reason the team wasn't better than it was because of the types of situations you're talking about. We had one of the lowest averages when you had bases loaded. Mm-hmm. Bases loaded, no outs. When you had runners on second and third, we were like in the bottom half in all of those categories where you couldn't justify like with that average that we would be that poor in those situations, but we were really, really, really good when there was nobody on base. And then once people got on base, it's like the bats froze, and
The emphasis on launch angle, and then the inability to hit a sac fly just never jived with me. I've never understood how you can pound launch angle all through your system, and then once you get people on base, all of a sudden it's an impossibility to hit a ball into the outfield. Just no way.
Yeah.
There's no excuse for not scoring a run when you have a runner at third in less than two outs. I mean, like, that's got to happen most of the time if you're going to compete.
Yeah, and as the percentages say within baseball, I mean, if you get somebody on second base with no outs, I mean, you should be scoring at least, you know, 60, 65% of the time. I mean, it's what you have to be scoring. And the Pirates weren't doing that. So, I mean, even with last year, with the collapse that they had, in my eyes, it wasn't as epic as people had shown it to be. I mean, there was a lot of injuries and stuff that piled up. But if we even get a couple of those extra runs in a few of those games, we could have had 73, 74 wins. But would that still have made the season better? I think for some people it may have.
I think that the biggest problem really was a lot of those losses weren't just 5-4 heartbreakers. They were losing 16-2, 10-3. I mean, you pile those back to back to back, it looks a heck of a lot worse than just losing a few squeakers. And they had a few weeks there where they were losing 3-4 consecutive games getting pounded like that.
Oh, absolutely.
That makes the entire outcome look worse. The fans don't care about those two wins you got that week when the four losses that you racked up were by a combined 34 points. You know, you look bad.
Yeah, you look...
There's no way to put it besides that.
And the funny thing is it's the same thing as if they were not, you know, two games out of first place and, you know, just under 500 at the All-Star break. When you look at a team like that and then it falls to that, it could be a lot different than a team that just performs at a certain level for the entire year. So there was those expectations that were set by, you know, Josh Bell's meteoric rise and like the historicness of his May that Cody had brought up, you know, while we were sitting here. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, also went into that because, I mean, we've talked about this before, is the first couple months of the Pirates season, there was... You know, the pitching was out of this world, and then it fell off, you know, the map, and the hitting was out of this world, and then towards the end of the season, you know, nothing was really clicking good enough to even pull out.
Last year, nothing lined up either. The pitching was on fire starting out. The bats were dead cold. Then the bats picked up, then the pitching went terrible. Then the injuries started. Then the drama started, on top of more injuries. And then the bats that were carrying them went cold too, and it was brutal.
Yeah, and it's what I think your article was just trying to prevent and look for that stuff that, you know, did not make it happen again this year, is to kind of focus on that kind of stuff. And I think we had a conversation just like through text message a couple days ago where I was just basically like, I can understand why Cora is a part of this team. Like, I can understand why Cora is a coach on this team.
Yeah.
Just because of, I mean, he's a baseball guy. He worked through the minors in the Padres system. He worked himself up to become a folk hero within the Chicago White Sox. And he's respected enough that people are interviewing him for bench coach positions. Like, he's a guy that knows baseball. I'm not sure he knows third base. I'm not sure. I even talked about this last year. I'm not sure.
He hasn't performed like he does. I mean,
Or maybe he's just excited. Maybe he sees a guy rounding and he's like, you know what? I'm going to send this guy no matter what. But we've even seen it a couple times in spring training where the inning ends with a guy getting thrown out at home plate who could have been sitting on third base with one out. And even if you get a bloop single, you get another run there. I mean, that could cost you a run. That's that little fundamental thing that we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, and that was, you know, another thing too. The team doesn't do any favors by last year. They come out and they say they're going to be super aggressive on the base pass, and they're going to be super aggressive sending runners. So automatically we're looking for it. You know, you're looking for that aggression now. So every time he waves somebody and it doesn't work out, right away you point back to, oh, Johnny Cora trying to be too aggressive there. He screwed up. The team planted that seed last year.
Oh, they did.
It's another big reason why this management team needed to change. I mean, they had gotten to the point where their own message was starting to hurt the club. So, I mean, you know, this year, you know, I hope that he's a little bit more contained than that, and I hope he does put the stop sign up a little. But we had several instances last year where the players afterwards, there seemed to be some confusion. Did he put up a sign? Did they ignore it? There was a little bit of back and forth between, in the press between Clint Hurdle and the players themselves, like who decided to go for.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure somebody put up a meme or one of those GIFs on Facebook that was basically, it almost looked like Joey Cora had like one hand up and one hand waving or something. It was just like, what was his signal? What was the player thinking? What was, you know, anything that was going up? And we did see, I mean, the number of times that you see a player run through a stop sign from the third base coach that you don't even see on TV. But if you're at the game, you see it happen. If they show it on replay and they at least get like a little bit of like, a close shot on him, you may see that happen. But if not, there's even some that are being blamed on him that may have just been the aggressiveness of the player thinking they could score. And sometimes that's in their nature. That's in a player's nature to, I mean, when we were I was talking with Matt Capps last week and talking with the Fort before that, talking about the competitive nature of players to just want to do well and to just, you know, perform well. It's not like any of these Pirates players are going out there looking to suck. Gregory Polanco is not looking to trip over his own feet and misplay a ball. So stop posting that meme, because he actually has made some pretty good plays in the outfield. And if you put those all together, I mean, he's not a great outfielder, but everybody thinks if you post that one meme or that one GIF that he is like the worst outfielder that's ever existed in the world. I can remember Jose Osuna, who the Pirates fan base was clamoring to sign. Has everybody go out and search Jose Osuna missed fly balls. Search that on YouTube, everybody, and you will see last year at least 10 plays where he was diving before the ball, the ball had already hit the ground, and then he dove. And you're like complaining about Gregory Polanco. I'm not saying that Gregory Polanco is the next, you know, Roberto Clemente standing out there in right field, but he's also not as bad as everybody thinks him to be in that position.
He's awkward.
He's
a big guy. He's awkward. I always say he looks like a baby giraffe trying to learn how to run. I feel that way. When he gets going, he gets moving really fast. But he's not going to be a quick start guy. He's just not. He's all about strides.
I can understand and I can empathize with everybody's frustrations that, you know, things haven't always gone the way that we wanted them to. And then they always point to the Dominicans. They say, we built this, you know, facility down there. We put all this money into the facility. And they say, what are we getting from it? And Chris and I on a previous episode talked about the fact that, I mean, we got Marte. We got Polanco. There's teams that don't even have any of that. And we have other guys coming up throughout the system. Look at, I know Cody's probably going to be writing some articles. I know that I'm going to be writing some articles. And I've had requests from some people to just basically write about the Dominican Summer League team from last year. The Dominican Summer League team from last year was one of the most dominant teams I've ever seen in minor league baseball in any form ever. So, and it's like, well, Bob Nutting put this money in. When is the... You cannot expect immediate results. We had zero pipeline into the Dominican prior to, I mean, it was limited at best.
The MLB draft, you're picking 18-year-olds at times, and you wonder what they're going to actually turn into. Their bodies aren't fully developed yet. Well, take that back 3 or 4 years. You're picking 15-year-olds, 14-year-olds, expecting to understand exactly what's going to happen to their body and how they're going to develop.
But you can't sign them until they're like a certain age, because that's how the Braves got into trouble, I believe.
Sure. But either way, you're starting to develop kids like that are, you know, far too young to actually understand exactly what they're going to become. They're showing signs of being able to do some things. Gregory Polanco, for instance, you know, when he was discovered, he was a pitcher. You know, they saw him play in the outfield because they needed an extra player. I mean, this sort of thing is very typical of the Dominican players, and I think people don't realize the lack of resources they have down there to actually develop ball players before the Pirates and other teams now have invested down there.
Yeah.
It's very important for the game itself, not just the Pirates.
Yeah, it's like the number of players Cody from Rumbunner and I were also discussing today about Tanaj Thomas, where, you know, he was drafted by the Indians and he was drafted as an infielder. And they recognized the potential of him as a pitcher. But also, it's with pitchers, that's everyone knows that's like one of the most awkward motions that a human being can make, and the stuff that can happen to your elbow, your shoulder, and all that kind of different stuff. So there's things that can happen like as your development throughout, but they don't know what a lot of these guys are going to be.
Well, Francisco Liriano was an outfielder and a right-handed outfielder whose father forced him to learn how to throw left-handed so that he could have a career. And look what he turned into.
Yeah, so I mean, that's where you can't like judge this type of stuff that's happening like this quickly, because the stuff that you're investing in the future. You're not investing in the present a lot of these times. And I think that's the difference, especially here in Pittsburgh. I mean, a lot of people are Steeler fans. I mean, I know there's a lot of Penguins fans out there, a lot of Pirates fans out there, but I mean, there are people that try to compare baseball to football at times, and that is something that cannot even come close to being compared. I mean, basketball at some parts, I'm not a big basketball fan, but there are certain players that can come out of high school and play to the level of, you know, an NBA player, or at least work their way through that. I don't see too many kids, and I'll call them kids because I'm an old man now, but I don't see too many kids coming out of high school that can step onto a Major League Baseball field and perform.
You're few and far between.
Yeah.
Bryce Harper comes to mind.
Yeah. This thing is, you can probably pick, I mean, in the history of baseball that I've been watching, I have about, you know, 3 to 4 names that I juggle in my head of guys who were able to make that leap at that young of an age.
Ken Griffey Jr.
Doc Gooden is one for me. So there's guys that can do that if they have a certain skill set, and it's also, you know.
In other words, don't ask us about the kid they just signed from Australia. We don't know. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. I mean, here's the thing is, I'm hoping for him, and, you know, 16-year-old kid, and he definitely, within the league that he's playing in, has shown, you know, flashes. And even though I talked on a previous show with Chris that we were excited about, you know, possibly making a signing. We were like linked to somebody from the Dominican Republic for next year for $2.5 million. The kid is 16 years old. He's got some tools, and I've seen videos on him, and it's like, you know what? Looks like he can play ball.
Yeah.
But we don't know what he's going to develop into. And even though, I mean, on one show I'm talking with Cody, I was talking about, we're talking about Quinn Priester, who's been self-taught. You don't know if he's going to come up with a Tommy John. You don't know if he's going to, you know, lose some, you know, if they're going to try to teach him some different technique, that he's going to lose some of the velocity, or if he's going to get a, you know, injury at some point in time where it's going to cause him to, you know, step back a little bit. So all of this stuff is, And I understand why Pirates fans get, you know, worried, you know, about the prospects and projections. And they probably think that I believe that every single prospect that steps into a Pirates uniform is at some point going to perform on the major league stage. And everyone that knows me and had conversations with me today knows that it's not. We had a conversation about all the shortstops that we have, you know, gathered. And everybody was like, why did we pick up another shortstop? We already have however many shortstops. As a prospect person, I realize you put 6 to 10 of them in a barrel, you shake them all around, and there's probably going to be one or two that rise to the top of an everyday major league player, a two-war player, a one-war player. There's going to be a bunch that are going to be fill-ins. There's a bunch that are going to be utility players. There's a bunch that aren't even ever going to make the major leagues. However, you put as many fish, monkeys, whatever you can in that barrel, and you shake it up and you see what rises to the top, because that's what's going to bring this team to, you know, hopefully another, and I say this, another window of opportunity, another, you know, just a chance to compete. And not Neil Huntington compete, not 500, the compete that we competed in with Bob Nutting's tiny payroll in 1998, we were the second best team in Major League Baseball, to that level of compete. And I just basically hope that we can put things together. I hope that, you know, Ben Cherington sticks with his plan. And I hope, and I've said this before, and I'll say this every single episode for all of you Nutting haters, if he does not do this, I will be sitting down at Mike's Beer Bar or whatever bar exists. Actually, you know what? I'm going to be sitting at 412 Brewery is where I'm going to be sitting when, if Bob Nutting does not put the money in like he did for the 2013, 14, and 2015 teams, I will be here with my pitchfork. I will be here with my torch, and we will take back PNC Park. You know what, Gary? I've talked way too much. I do appreciate your input. Your nuggets of knowledge outweighed my blathering and my drunken stupidity today, and I appreciate that. So everybody, give Gary Morgan a follow. He is at GaryMo2007 on Twitter. Give Cody Potanko a follow on Twitter. Read his stuff on Rumbunner. Cody, step in here for a second. Give your Twitter handle again, brother, just so we can make sure everybody's following you.
It's Tank Potanko. That's TANKPOTANKO 013. Follow me, man. I'm pretty funny.
Yeah, he's pretty funny, and he also writes really good stuff about the prospects that are coming up. Gary writes really insightful pieces about like the fundamentals of baseball, how we're going to shock people, and people comment stuff without reading the article. Please read the article first. So go to insidethebucks.com and SI channel. Go to Rumbunner, read Cody's stuff, and follow us here at Bucks in the Basement. Follow us. It's at Bucks Basement on Twitter, Bucks in the Basement on Facebook, and always at bucksinthebasement.com.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but they